welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, April 7th, 2013, and you're listening right now to episode 97. 97 episodes of this ridiculous, stupid thing that we've been doing for far too long. My name is Rob. Hanging out over there poking at his phone is Jason.
Hi.
Hi. What you poking at there?
I'm pulling up some information.
What kind of information are you pulling up?
Stuff we're going to talk about on the show.
What are we going to talk about on the show?
I'm not gonna say that now.
Well, then I'm totally lost interest.
Thanks for that.
How you been?
Oh, spectacular.
Okay, good.
Absolutely spec-freaking-tacular.
That's a little bit of hyperbole there, I imagine.
What? Why would it be hyperbole?
I don't know.
Why am I not spectacular?
Well,
I'm recording a podcast, Rob. I'm totally spectacular.
You're rarely spectacular, Jason. I see you just about every day, and you are rarely in a spectacular mood.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, right. Okay, sure.
But I'm in a spectacular mood today.
Are you?
Because I'm recording a podcast with you, Rob.
Oh, I'm touched.
Don't be.
Touched right here.
See, Rob, that's not cool because nobody can see where you're pointing.
I know. Right. So they just have to use their imagination.
He pointed to his heart. I just want to be clear.
Yeah.
You weirdos.
Yeah. So it's been a month so far. April, huh?
It has.
It has been, I don't know. We're recording this in March.
March.
So,
such a jerk.
I don't know. It's April 7th.
It's not April 7th in real life, though.
Yeah,
is it in real life, or is it? I'm confused. Where is it?
What? I feel like we already kind of derailed here.
Where is it a thing? I don't know. There's words, and then there's these
Should
words.
We just start over here?
It's a documentary podcast, Rob. Sometimes we're not always awesome. No, I was looking up some information for our feature of the week. We're going to talk a little bit about... A little bit about water balloon washout and fulfillment, and I'm going to give some exact breakdown numbers from the Kickstarter, which I know you guys have been waiting for, so yeah, it's going to be awesome.
It's good. Before we get into that, I wanted to say how happy I am that that spring is on its way. It's still not really here yet, but it's on its way because Oberon is back. Oh, Oberon. It's been too long. Oberon was terrible last year. It was really bad last year.
Yeah, I stopped drinking it like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I did not care for it. I think I had one last year and was like, blah. So I tried it again this year, and it was good. It was good again.
Good.
Yeah. It's weird to me. I don't know much about beer, and I'm not a beer snob, but it's weird to me that I can tell the difference from year to year in those batches.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that actually does make you a beer snob.
All right. Maybe I'm becoming a beer snob. But anyway, Oberon's back. I've already had three of them. Tonight, but...
Yeah, we're making a podcast!
Halfway through my first six-pack of the year, so...
Nice. Yeah, I'll have to get some sometime soon.
Yeah.
I haven't drank much lately, because, you know, I'm not an alcoholic like you.
Yeah, well, you know, you have kids. We don't. We just got beer coming out of the walls. Beer and wine and liquor just pouring out of every outlet, every light switch.
Based on your Twitter feed, people might assume that.
Yeah.
You're always tweeting about drinking.
Always. Every day. Every day.
Especially when you're at work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at work, drunk again.
Yeah. No, I've been playing with Epic Kaiju Tea Party. I think I'm going to rename that. I'm going to change the name to Epic Monster Tea Party.
All right.
I don't want to kind of stick myself with that Japanese aesthetic. Okay. So kind of more in line with a little more mainstream idea. I mean, it's the Kaiju idea, but not directly connected to Godzilla, you know?
So call it Monster. That's
right.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and that'll free me up when I'm drawing some monsters. I guess I've decided that I'm going to go ahead and make a version of that and put it on GameCrafter.
Yeah.
I've been having fun playing with some artwork. If you guys watch my Twitter feed, you've probably seen some of that by now. So by doing that, it'll kind of free me up to be a little more loose with some of the monster designs. I don't need to directly mimic some of the Godzilla stuff.
Right.
So that'll be fun. So hopefully look for that sometime in the near future. Hopefully I'll have that done by the end of April, ready to go. Yeah,
and the first piece of art you made looks really fun.
Really very happy with it, yeah.
So you'll have two games on GameCrafter there.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and you made the suggestion, because I was looking at pricing of components in GameCrafter, and realistically, I mean, this is going to be a little bit of a pricey game, because it's got a lot of wooden bits in it, and five fabric bags and some cards, you know.
Right.
It's not a ton of components, but the components that I happen to have chosen for this game are a little more expensive on GameCrafter.
Right.
You know? So I think I'm going to do, you suggested this. I think I'm going to do two versions of the game on GameCrafter. One is kind of the basic version, where instead of using meeples, it'll have just colored cubes.
Right. And the full game plays just like normal. It's the game we've been playing,
right,
basically.
Yeah. All the rules are the same, but it would be colored cubes. And that'll allow me to keep the cost of the game a little bit lower. But I think I'll also do a deluxe version that will have actual meeples in it. And the meeples, like the price difference, if you don't know on GameCrafter, price of a wooden cube is about 11 cents. The price of an actual meeple on there is 40 cents.
Right, so it's a big difference.
Yeah, so
you have 42
right
in the game, right?
Right, so by switching from cubes to meeples, it basically raises the price of the game almost $11.
Right.
Which is crazy to me. But, you know, I mean, I think that's the better way to play because you have little people, you
that's
know?
The point.
And that's
you're squishing
fun.
People, yeah.
Yeah, but price-wise, that's just kind of crazy and kind of painful. So I'll make a deluxe edition. I'll probably throw a couple extra monster designs in it, too.
That's cool.
I don't know what the final pricing on that's going to be, but that's kind of my plan right now.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea. I mean, that way, if people just want to try the game, they can buy the normal version. But if they want to go crazy and play it the way like you really wanted to design it, then they have the meeples.
And I'm going
to
try and do the same kind of pricing that I did with Rumplebum, not you know just round it up to the next 99 cent kind of thing, because that's what GameCrafter wants you to do. I'm not looking to make a bunch of money off of this. I just want to put something out there that people can try.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a fun game. It's a really fun game. It's not super complex. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. We had fun playing it.
Yeah. When we get to emails and comments at the end of the show, I'll read a playtest comment from one of our listeners.
Right. You had a listener like ask for the info so they could playtest it.
Right. So I'll talk about that later. But anyway, you want to talk about Watermelon Washout, and I'm excited to hear this stuff.
Yes. Yes. I haven't told you any of this before. That's false. I told you it all.
I'm pretending. Okay. It's the illusion.
Right. So last time on the show, we talked a little bit about how... I went about, you know, the fact that I shipped out all the stuff, right? And now I want to talk about all the pricing and how much everything cost. And then how much shipping costs and all that's done and stuff. So, yeah. Speaking of which, right now, if you back the game and you filled out a survey and you live in America, you should have the game now. If you live outside of America, it's been shipped, but I don't know how long it takes to get there. So,
international shipping, yeah.
Right. So there's a couple guys who are international backers. Thank you for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Might take a little longer to get to you. I'm sure it does. But I did send those out with all the other ones at the same time. So you may have them by now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So here is how it breaks down. Now, this is what I'm talking about is the cost of... I'm not talking about what I made for the Kickstarter. You guys all know that. It's a little over $7,000.
Yeah.
So the cost of the actual... Well, when I say I made a little over $7,000, I made less than that on the Kickstarter. Because Kickstarter, of course, takes out their...
Take their cut.
It was about 8% that I lost to Kickstarter and Amazon total.
Okay.
Which is fine. That's totally fine. All right. So we used Delano Services for printing. And you've heard about some of our trials and triumphs with them.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that a little more as part of this as well, but we'll save that for the end. So the total cost of for 1,052 games was $5,523 even. 1,052 because they do a slightly larger print run and we ordered 1,000, you get a little extra. The testing was to make it go from 12 plus to 8 plus for the legals on that, was $168.80. That is, Delano sent it out for me to a testing agency who looks at the cards and says, no one's going to choke on this. 8 plus is fine.
Yeah.
The die charge was $450. That was for the box. That was the die charge for the box. It's a one-time charge. Not everyone charges that. I wish that they didn't charge it, but they do.
That's so, the die to cut out the shape of the box.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if I were to do another print run, I would not pay that. It's a one-time charge. Additional proofs were $75 because we had the thing where the one card was a little dark, so we ordered another set of proofs. We actually ordered two sets of proofs. They only charged us for the one. So that was nice of them. That gives a grand total of $6,216.80. So that runs that I means I'm paying about $5.91 per copy, which is a little high. It's higher than I'd like it to be.
Yeah.
If I'd went in China or something, or if I'd ordered more through Delano. If I'd ordered 2,000, the price dropped dramatically. But I think I still ended up having to pay like $9,000 or something, and it was just there was no way. It was just too much.
Yeah.
So it was a good deal, but I mean I just couldn't, you know, plus I didn't want to have to store 2,000 copies in my house. Yeah, if the Kickstarter, we had sold 500 copies on Kickstarter, I probably would have ordered 2,000, but we didn't, so I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there's one other thing, and I'm just going to combine the totals here because it's not my place to give specifics. But for art and layout and all that combined, the design, the layout, all the stuff, and all the artwork, we paid $1,200 approximately. That may not be a perfect number, but it's right around there. So that's kind of how the thing went. Oh, and then shipping. I don't have the exact total on shipping, like as in the specific number, but it was less than $300.
For all the shipping?
All the shipping. Yep. Okay. It was, I can tell you this. It was $2.86 for every copy that I sent out by itself. Mm-hmm. It was $3.94 for every two copies that went out together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was $5.80 for three and four copies.
Okay.
That was because if it's less than 13 ounces, you can send it regular mail, and it's about $3.94 up to $4. And two games were 12 ounces. So that worked out really, really well.
Nice. Yeah.
About $300-ish, a little less than that, that included the bubble mailers that I bought,
mm-hmm.
Which I got those like at Walmart. I think they were about 50 cents a piece, maybe a little bit less. I did handwritten labels since I only had, I think, 100 and some packages to send out. So mm-hmm. I just did handwritten labels and
Okay.
So that's kind of the gist of it. And I also saved money because I knew a lot of local people that backed me. So I hand delivered all those copies.
Yeah. I brought some with me to Protospiel.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And Rob brought Dusty's and Neil's to Protospiel,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome because it saves you a few bucks here and there. When you're doing a Kickstarter with not a lot of profit margin, that's important. Plus, yeah. I mean, I found, especially in Kalamazoo, when I brought it to people, they were excited that I brought them my game.
Sure.
They thought that was pretty neat. That's the thing. I mean, I wrote in the email where I sent it to Rob, not bad for a first game.
Yeah.
And I stand behind that. I feel good about that. It was certainly a huge learning experience. I can't even describe how much of a learnage experience it was. I've got more stuff to talk about, but did you have questions or anything you want to ask based on that? Anything you want to make sure I'm talking about?
Oh, no, go on. Keep talking. Okay. We'll see what comes to mind.
So Delano, we used, we've said some crap about Delano, and I don't actually mean like we've bad talked them. I mean, we've been very honest with their failings their successes for sure. I mean, some of those were really frustrating, and we express that, and we try and be positive, but I mean, we want to be honest too. So overall, I would use Delano again. Absolutely. Mainly because in the end they did a good job, as in the product looks really nice. They did a great job with it. As for the time they said they would deliver it, they were ahead of schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And any of the pitfalls that we had previously, I don't think we would have, because they were things that if we knew what they wanted, despite the fact that they didn't tell us, we'd be fine with that. Now, so next time we know what they want, we don't have to ask, and I think that things that I would do differently, I would have it print ready, with the exception of any stretch goals we might add. If I do another Kickstarter, I would have it print ready when the Kickstarter started.
Okay.
That would cut the time for delivery, would cut the stress level for that, for both of us.
Right.
I think I would, if that's something I would really focus on doing, is having it ready. And maybe even having them have proofed some of the files for us, so that we feel good about it. Before the Kickstarter even starts.
Mm.
And I think the Kickstarter would do better too if they could see, the artwork we showed them from the beginning and the layout we showed them from the beginning, like it's 1,000 times nicer on the real version of the game
than it was
in the Kickstarter. And, so that certainly makes a difference. So I think, I think having that, there's a reason why you have that done ahead of time. And I didn't know that for sure the first time around. Now I know what's better. So what else about that? So Delano, though, I would use them again. I mean, I would use them again. I would caution anyone who wanted to use them again, who wanted to use them for the first time, ask a ton of questions.
Yeah.
Be extremely clear with the things you need. And in addition to that, just get everything in writing.
Yeah.
Absolutely get everything in writing. Because I've talked to other people who had issues with not having things in writing, and I don't think they were doing anything malicious. I think they were just confused.
Yeah.
They did the wrong number. They did the wrong thing, the wrong kind of cards. I mean, so, you know, that that really have that in writing, you know, and keep referring to that in writing. I did that a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had a moment of panic because the guy sent me a thing and said, hey, we finished your 1,502 copies. And I replied back and said, what? You know, I asked for 1,000 and you said you might do 1,100 with a 10% overage. So what's going on? And then you reply back, oh, sorry, it's 1,052. I had it wrong. And he said 1,502 instead of 1,052.
Got it, yeah.
You know, and I mean, I had that moment of panic because they have my credit card, right? Like, they could charge me, even though legally they can't, you know. So, and that was just a typographical error. But it shows you how nervous I was because there were so many issues. And, you know, when we picked it up, we stood there and we opened boxes in front of the guys and looked at the cards to make sure we were happy with it. You know, I mean, that was all because we didn't trust them, and that stinks to feel that way.
Stinks. Now, yeah. Now Delano, they did very well with cards. Do you know what other capacity they have? I mean, can they handle bits and things?
Yeah. Dwarven Miner and, 4 Taverns.
Oh, okay.
Well, do they have bits? Trying to think. I know it's been a little while since I played Dwarven Miner. 4 Taverns, I don't know if that has bits. I think that's mostly cards.
Cards. Dwarven Miner, though, it had like cardboard chits and stuff, didn't it?
Yeah.
Card, yeah.
So, yeah, and those were great. So, okay. You know, the only thing I ever noticed about them with that was the box for Dwarven Miner didn't always necessarily feel like it was like, it didn't have like the inset thing, I don't think.
The insert, the internal insert.
Yeah, so like, that's something, I don't know, maybe they don't do that or something. But the quality of the stuff looked good to me. It looked like they know what they're doing. So, yeah, I don't think we could afford to use them for a big box game. Because I'm going to guess that Rather Dashing Games probably ordered a lot of copies of that game.
Yeah, yeah.
And that probably got them a good discount.
Probably.
But, like, I mean, if we were buying them in, like, $20 a game, there's just no way. I mean, I would have to have a huge Kickstarter to make that work.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I'd have to set a ridiculous goal just to get... You know,
so the lesson learned here is that Delano, if you're local like we are, it could make sense to work with them if you also have a kind of small scale game. If you are not local, then the shipping on top of the higher price of production to get it done in the U.S. might not make sense.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, you're going to pay even more shipping to get it on a boat over from China, but the cost of production is so much lower that it makes more sense.
Yeah. I want to talk to somebody, and I could be completely wrong with this number, but I want to say they had told me that a game like Water Moon Washout, I could have got for about $1.25 to $2 a copy.
Oh, wow.
So, huge difference.
Plus shipping or including shipping?
I think plus shipping.
Plus shipping, okay.
But still, I mean, if you're paying $500 for shipping... That still is a huge price difference.
Right.
The catch is you have to be able to deal with those places in China. Now, I've heard a lot of good stuff about quality playing cards, and I am going to check them out next time because people have said with quality playing cards, they print in China, but they're based in the U.S.
Yeah.
So all that crap, they deal with all that.
Yeah.
They have specialists that deal with people in China and speak Chinese. You know, they speak the language and they know what they're doing.
Right.
You don't have to try and figure that out.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I might check that out next time.
Sure. Hmm. Okay. So, so lessons learned are be better prepared for your Kickstarter.
Yep.
Ask more questions and be more in the face of the person you're working with at the printer.
Yes.
Oh gosh. What else? Try and kind of wrap up or quantify here, you know?
Yeah. You know, I feel like that kind of covers it all.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, again, I did not do very well that I would highly recommend doing, and I would do next time, get review copies out. Take the time to send out review copies to the people that you need to review it who are going to give you the good press.
Yeah.
That's super important. That's something I didn't do, and that was also something that hurt a lot. So that was a tough one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, good. Yeah, that's good to know, good to hear. Hopefully everybody out there agrees that it's... I think it's been a fascinating experience to just kind of see and experience all this with you.
Yeah.
And hopefully longtime listeners who've been kind of on this ride along with us from the beginning, hopefully they all feel the same way, that it's been really interesting and hopefully helpful to them to kind of experience it all as it happens. along with you.
Yeah, I hope so. And if not, hey, good news is the last time we're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll still give updates on sales and stuff.
Yeah.
I've sold like around a dozen copies already, so mm-hmm. Which is kind of cool because I haven't actually put them out for sale yet.
Yeah.
It's just me people approaching me saying, hey, can I buy a copy of this? So yeah. I feel good about that.
Yeah, that's good.
So
that's good.
So we'll get them up on the website very soon. Mm-hmm. Check it out. Maybe they're out there now. I don't know. Probably not, but I'm going to work on it. To get that set up so that you can go out and buy copies. And right now, I'm still planning to keep the price $15, free shipping in the mm-hmm. U.S. Because mm-hmm. Now that I know I can send it for less than $3, I feel pretty comfortable just covering that myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I'm not trying to make a ton of money. I'm just trying to make my money back that, you know, we fell short on the Kickstarter, meaning that, you know, what we got from the Kickstarter was not enough to cover all the expenses.
Sure.
So I just want to make sure that we get that money back.
Right. So, cool.
My wife really would like that too. So.
Yeah, I bet.
She'd probably let me make another game if we made money.
Hey.
So if you want me to make another game, buy a copy of this game.
Right. Help us out. Help a dude out. All right. Yeah. Well, let's move on to practicing the pitch tonight.
Yes. And it's your turn.
It's my turn.
To pitch a game.
All right. Well, so last week I talked quite a bit about going to Protospiel. While we were there, the Game Crafter was also there. They had a kind of a freebie table set up, which a free extra, I guess, overstock little bits and
yeah. They did that on Unpub too.
Yeah, okay.
It's pretty cool.
Blank cards and things. And as we were getting ready to go that day, Jason Kotarski and I were kind of looking at the table and picking at stuff, and they had spinners there. And I said to Jason, I was like, man, I kind of want to take a spinner home with me and just to see what I can do with it. And he's like, yeah, man, yeah, you should totally do that. Hey, can I pick out some pieces to give to you too? I said, yeah, okay, yeah, pick out four pieces for me and give me four pieces, and we can do it as a challenge on the show, and I will be challenged to make a game using the four pieces that you gave me and the spinner. And so what he did is in addition to my spinner, he picked out two little plastic race cars, I think blue and red, and then two little pawns, again in matching colors, blue and red. Okay.
Okay.
And so I had to make a game using these race cars, these pawns, and a spinner.
Okay.
And I tried as hard as I could to have those be the only components, but I just couldn't make that work. I tried really hard, though. Okay. So this is still a little loose in my head.
Okay.
I don't have a name for it, but I'm kind of thinking of it as like a prohibition kind of roots of NASCAR sort of thing, you know, because
okay.
Yeah, the roots of NASCAR are running moonshine across the borders and all that kind of thing. Right. So you're a moonshiner or you're a NASCAR driver, maybe
Formula M for moonshine.
Okay. All right. Sure. Let's go with that.
We really don't call it that. No.
Okay. So you are driving a car around a track trying to, pick up, it's also kind of pick up and deliver sort of thing. Pick up loads of moonshine and drop them off at the buyers. And you're trying to avoid the cops.
Okay.
Okay. To kind of appropriately explain how this works, you also need to understand the scale of the spinner here. The spinner, there's the arm that goes around a circle, and then there's the circular mat that attaches to, right?
Right.
Okay, so the circular mat is about 8 inches across.
Okay.
But the spinner arm itself is only about 4 inches across.
So it covers about half.
Covers about half.
Center. There's
right.
A nice wide area outside that's free.
That's free. The spinner's not going to get in your way. So around the outside of this board, of this map, so the spinner mat basically is the game board. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Around the outside of this, there's a road. Okay. And it's, and the spinner itself is divided into 24 pie sections or, you know, slices of a pie. So 24 of those. And so there are 24 spaces around the outside of this track. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where your car moves around. Your car is going to always be moving in a circle. Let's say clockwise around the board. Okay. All right. Those pie slices then also correspond with different locations.
That makes sense.
Okay. And there are six different locations on the board. Now, these are not evenly divided, though. So it's not that there's two or four of each. So there are different quantities of them. So you have a speakeasy. You have a baseball park, a country store, a theater, a depot, like a train depot, and the police station. Okay. Now, your car can only go around the outside of the track. If you actually want to visit one of these locations, your dude has to get out of the car and walk up to it.
Okay? That makes sense.
So your car is stuck going around the track. Your little pawn guy is the only thing that can go in and out. So go closer to the center of the spinner mat.
Right.
Right. Okay. So what you do is, and I should say each of the locations correspond with a specific action. Right. Okay. On your turn, you can move a total of two spaces. That means you can move your car one space clockwise around the board, or two spaces around the board, or you can park your car and get your guy out of the car and move one to, you know, there are three spaces moving inward, pointing towards the center of the pie slice.
Mm-hmm.
So you can move your car, or you can move your guy, or some combination of the two. Two move actions per turn. All right.
Okay.
Obviously, though, your car cannot move unless your guy is in the car. All right.
Right.
So there are six actions. Let me say it this way. The action that corresponds with the speakeasy is a plus one move option. So instead of moving two, you can move three. The ballpark corresponds with a pickup action. So if you're going to use the ballpark action, you can use that to pick up a card. So that's you need to go to the depot to pick something up. You have to be at the depot in order to use the pickup action because the train brings in the materials.
Okay.
And then you can draw a card from the deck. There's a deck of, let's say, 24 cards. Okay. And that card will tell you where you need to deliver your moonshine to. All right.
Okay.
Maybe it's moonshine, maybe it's beer, maybe it's wine, whatever. But it tells you which of the locations you have to deliver your thing to. Okay. The country store, its power is a spinner shift. And I'll get back to this here. But it lets you move where the arrow is pointing forward or backward one space or one pie slice.
Okay.
I'll get back to that. The theater corresponds with the deliver action. So if the arrow is pointing to a theater space, that means the action you can use in your turn is you can deliver. So if I've picked up my moonshine, I need to deliver it to the speakeasy, the arrow has to land on a theater, which allows me to deliver it to the speakeasy. But my dude also has to be at the speakeasy.
Okay.
It's getting a little complicated. It'll wrap up. I promise. Okay. The train depot allows you to move the spinner arm a full 180 degrees. And then the police station requires you to spin the spinner. You have to flick it with your finger and spin it. Okay. So on your turn, what you're actually doing here is you have the two move actions, and then you also have your spinner action. Whichever location the spinner is pointing to, that's the action that you have to take on your turn. It's not can, but you have to.
Okay.
All right. So if at the start of my turn, the spinner lands on is stopped at the 180 degree thing. So at some point before the next player takes a turn, I have to move that arm 180 degrees pointing the other way.
Okay.
And that'll correspond with whatever and whatever I leave that spinner arm pointing to is what my opponent has to do on his turn.
Okay.
So basically I have to take the action that he's forcing me into. He has to take the action that I'm forcing him into.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, when I'm doing a delivery, all right. Also on these spaces, there are little cardboard chits that are valued at 1, 2, and 3. Okay. The one chit is the outermost space where my pawn is going to be standing. Okay. And that is in range of the spinner. Okay. 2 is the next one. 3 is the innermost space.
Okay.
So it's going to take, if I'm going to go in all the way to the 3 space, then that's going to take me several turns to get to that from my car, right?
Right.
So that's, it's going to spend more time in the center of the spinner. All right. But when I do make my delivery there, I'm also going to get 3 points for that.
Okay.
And so I'm going to pick up that chit saying, hey, I got 3 points for that. All right. So, and this is where it kind of gets kind of funky, but whenever your guy is out of the car, he's at risk of getting picked up by the cops. Because right. When you're in your car, you can escape. No big deal.
Right.
Okay.
That makes sense.
But if you're out of your car and you're in one of those 3 spaces, those 3 spaces are arranged on the spinner mat so that if the arm sweeps by, it can knock your pawn over. All right. If your opponent, if lands on the police station space, to flick the spinner, they have to actually flick the spinner with their finger. And if it spins and knocks your pawn over, you lose your card.
Okay.
Basically, you get pulled over by the cops. They confiscate your illicit materials.
Right.
All right. And so it's about kind of trying to balance your actions and use the action your opponent forced you into, but leave them with something that they don't want to do, but manage to time your pickups and your delivers at the right times to try and get the most points you possibly can. The game ends when you run out of the items to deliver, run out of cards from the deck. And I don't know if I did a good job explaining that. Did that connect in the end?
I think I get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It doesn't sound complicated.
Yeah.
It sounds like
it's tricky to explain, but I think in practice it wouldn't be a really complicated game.
It'd be a super simple game to play.
Yeah.
But yeah, trying to envision it is a little tough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a spinner crossed with like a rondelle, basically. It's like a rondelle would be like a spinner style thing that doesn't spin. Like you just shift it every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, and sometimes you are going to flick it and spin it, but other times you're just going to set it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah. No, I like that. Sometimes it's so freeing to have to be forced into limitations like that.
Mm-hmm.
You should think about things you wouldn't normally think about. I think it's cool because it's a different way to use a spinner. It's not like, oh, we're just spinning it every turn to
spin and get the result and see a random result. Yeah.
You know, you're moving it.
Right. And you might get a point here where you both have pawns in the center and you have to flick the spinner. And so you might not want to flick it too hard. You want to flick it hard enough to hit the other guy, but not come all the way around and hit your guy.
And is not enough. It has to knock them over, right?
Right. Yeah. If he moves, well, whatever, he moves. But you just put it back, but it has to knock him over.
So if you make your opponent spin when it's just their guy there, they're going to try and be as soft as they can.
Right, right. So. Yeah, and you don't have to flick it clockwise. You can flick it clockwise or counterclockwise. Right. But remember also that when the arm goes around one way, the tail is still sticking out on the other side, and this could come around and hit you. So, you know, there's some dexterity aspects to it there, which I think are kind of quirky and silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it can be a nice compact game too.
Yeah. Actually, the spinner mats are the 8x8, you know, GameCrafter box sizes. If you're going to get something to fit in that, you kind of have to go with the full, you know, the full like 10x10 size pro box.
Oh, but that's kind of crazy.
It's a bummer, but I wish they had an 8x8 size box, you know.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
At any rate, it's just kind of silly. I don't really know what to call it, not other than, you know, Formula M, which
that's
is terrible.
A terrible idea.
Yeah, Moonshiners. Roots of NASCAR, I don't know.
Roots of NASCAR is terrible.
Pretty bad, too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spin and Win.
No, that's terrible.
but that's the idea. Very, very simple
out
and compact.
For a spin.
But there you go, Mr. Katarski. I managed to come up with something using those silly components that you gave to me.
And you have proved it, because you did it on the show. So.
Yeah, right, there you go.
So, hey, I like that pitch. Do you have some comments you could read?
Oh, yeah. I did get some feedback on Epic Kaiju Tea Party. This guy, his name is Shu Lee. I think it's Shu Lee. Shu, I'm sorry if I'm messing up your first name. I've never known anybody named Shu before, so I'm sorry. Anyway, so I pitched Epic Kaiju Tea Party a couple of weeks ago on the show, and the next day I got a tweet from this guy who said, basically, you know, saying, hey, I really love this idea, I can't wait to play it, you need to hurry up and put rules online. So I did. The next day I said, okay, I'll put rules online. And then later that day, he tweeted back at me a picture of him and his three daughters, playing Epic Kaiju Tea Party. And apparently they loved the crap out of it. So I thought I would read the email he sent me about that. I'll paraphrase some of this, but he says, so my little girls and I played Epic Kaiju Tea Party, as you already know tonight. We had a great time with the game, and I made a couple of tweaks as we played, as well as one observation. So major tweak number one. If you have two green cubes in your cup when you drink, only puke two cubes, not four. That's absolutely a good idea, because puking has always been a horrible penalty, and I already nerfed it from 5 to 3 to 2. So I think that makes sense that if you've got two cubes in your cup, you should only puke two.
Yeah.
You're only going to get sick once. Major change number two, brown cubes can dump any cup, not just an opponent's cup. So, and he's saying, I wanted to make myself barf twice. So yeah, and that was always my intention. I just wrote it poorly when I was writing up the rules. So, yes. A brown cube can let you dump any teacup back. Thing of note, out of two games, 16 of the total 18 red cubes on two games were squished. Take that how you want to. Not sure if they should be worth more points or if it's just because we all love pulling out another guy too much. That's something that was a problem when you and I played, right?
Right.
That we always wanted to squish the guy that allows you to draw more because you want to draw again.
Right.
But if the guy, if that guy is worth more points, it might be a harder decision.
Yeah, that's a really good...
Yeah. 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 So that's something I need to think about.
Because that was, as much as I hate to say it, a non-decision. I mean, it was like, if I squish him, I can have something else. I mean, right. There was only one thing that was worth less points than him.
Right. So it was an easy choice for that. So I need to up the point value of that one. And it really, I think when it comes down to it, all I need to focus on with this game is just balancing the points, basically.
Yeah. Scoring is definitely your thing to fix on that.
He says the plague guys, the green guys, being the second highest scoring dude is an awesome mechanic. My middle daughter was really sad when she had two in her cup, but when she didn't puke those up after drinking, she won with the 10 points she got and learned a lot about risk reward.
Nice.
Which, that's pretty cool.
That is.
It's a great kids game. My girls and I dug it. We will definitely play it again. Gonna have my wife sew some cloth bags. Because apparently when they were playing, because you need cloth bags.
Oh, I saw this.
Yeah, when you're using cloth bag, you need that to be kind of your stomach to dump your stuff into. And he said they were actually playing with hand puppets and just dumping the cubes into hand puppets. So he says, going to have my wife sew some cloth bags. Digging the cubes out of puppet arms and heads was annoying. So that's pretty funny. And I asked him for more comments. We talked more about scoring. He said... at our two games, the yellows got squished a lot too, but the kids liked chaining the steals. The yellow lets you steal something from somebody else. I love the elegance of having each meeple color worth a different ascending point value, but there seems to be a huge power level jump between the first three colors. We probably squished 5 out of 7 yellows in each game too. Brown, green, and pink definitely offered an interesting choice. Blue is sort of a core mechanic that you needed sometime. Blue is the one that allows you to drink.
Right.
But we're never sad to use it either way. Blue has to be low value.
Right.
Because
blue at one is good. Maybe don't scale it linearly.
Yeah, well, he goes on to address that on here. Yeah. Yellow and red are the two that felt like you always wanted to use the effect for the most part. I was thinking with the red meeples, it might be poor playing mixed with the human desire for exploration that makes them get squished more often. I mean, people are that way, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. Totally.
Let's see. People love to gamble when there's little risk, and often we found ourselves getting a blue meeple with the second draw, so it might not be a problem so much as human nature approaching mechanics illogically. Hard to say. So he's saying that I would often squish a two-pointer, hoping to get something better, but would just end up with a blue, which is worth less anyway.
But if that was worth 3 points, and you squished and got a blue, you'd be like, ah, rats!
I think 3 points for the yellow meeple is the correct spot.
Yes, I agree.
I almost want to make the red ones worth 3 as well. My designer's eye hates that nothing is worth 2 points then. I see that's what the problem is for me.
Right.
But I think red and yellow are pretty even on power level, and I would certainly think twice before squishing a 3-point guy to get a random. The game, to be marketable, probably needs to be marketed as a toy with a game included. It will definitely be hard to sell. That's an interesting thought, that if I could sell it like as a tea set with a game built in, you know?
Oh.
That's kind of what he's talking about here. Possibly you could simply suggest in the rules buying a Tea Party toy set to replace whatever components are too expensive. As it is, I'm not going to be able to sell it with a tea set. You know?
Right. Well, GameCrafter doesn't have that.
Exactly. So. As much as I'd love to. I think if you market it as a kid's game, you would be able to get away with the more toy-like components. A 4-cup tea set without a pot costs $20 retail, but he sent me a link to one that was like all light and sound and stuff. So I think you can probably get one for $5 at a you know, cheapo store.
Right.
But at any rate, he said, and then he closes just by saying, this is one of my little girl's favorite games now.
That's
so
awesome.
That's super awesome. So with that positive feedback and that encouragement from him, I've decided to do it on GameCrafter, you know, do the whole thing like I already talked about. So,
right. It's awesome.
And I'm playing with art style that I think is super fun. And I'm really having a good time putting that together.
Awesome.
So thank you, Shu. I appreciate that, man.
That is super duper awesome.
One other thing that I might cut this little bit out of the show. We'll see how it goes with scheduling and so on and so forth. Assuming everything went the way it was supposed to, the Tabletop Deathmatch premiered this past weekend. We're recording this in advance. I'm not allowed to talk about it in advance, but since this is going to post after the posting day, I think it's probably okay. The Tabletop Deathmatch finally is airing on the internet, Live on the internet.
Live right? on the internet.
I don't know when my episode is going to air. I don't know what episode is coming first, what game is coming first. Maybe mine was on this past weekend. Maybe it didn't work last weekend and it's going to be premiering tomorrow or something.
Right.
They were going to try and launch it with National Tabletop Day. But that's super exciting. So maybe mine just happened. Maybe mine is coming this week. They're going to be putting out shows twice a week for 8 weeks, I guess. 16 episodes, you know? 16 games, so 16 episodes. I don't know if they're going to be 10-minute episodes or half-an-hour episodes. I have no idea what to expect right now when I'm recording this. I have seen zero about it. but it's finally happening, and I'm thrilled about it. And the tentative plan right now is that they're going to talking about doing a screening of some stuff in Chicago. I think they're thinking Chicago and Seattle and probably Austin. They're going to go some major kind of arty cities and things. And assuming the schedule permits, I will probably be at one of the screenings in Chicago.
Awesome.
And we'll, what Max implied to me last time I talked to him was that they would probably do like a Q&A and stuff afterwards if they can show my episode, if we can work it out. So I'm pretty excited about that. That'll probably be sometime in May. I don't know what the schedule is going to be yet, but fingers crossed. So if you didn't know about it or if you haven't seen it yet, watch the Tabletop Deathmatch.
Yes, watch it.
I'm pretty excited. Finally, we get to see what happens. I still don't know who won. I literally still, honestly, not even lying to you, I do not know who won as of this recording. I have no idea. I have no idea.
I know. I called Max. I was like, dude, you just got to tell me. Don't tell Rob. Just tell me. Kidding.
That's not nice.
No, we don't know. We have no idea.
No clue. No idea who won. So I'm just as excited as you guys are to see it. Probably I'm more excited than you guys are because, be honest, but so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's all we got for tonight.
I think that's what we got.
Okay. Well, once again, thanks everybody for listening. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also tweet us @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin and I'm @poorly_designed. And you can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can get in touch with Jason for your own copy of Water Balloon Washout, coming soon to a storefront page on the website. Maybe it's working right now. I don't know. We'll see how long it takes to get it set up. You can also get a copy of the Rumpelbum Academy for Bug-Based Baking from the Game Crafter, and hopefully pretty soon a copy of Epic Monster Tea Party coming soon to the Game Crafter. That's my plan anyway. Seriously though, watch me on Twitter. I'll be tweeting some art that I'm doing for that, which is super fun. I think that's it.
Awesome.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
So say that again. So you just said...
I think that Jack Bauer is the second toughest action hero ever.
All right. And I'm going to say who I think you think the number one toughest action hero is.
And I'm right.
Okay.
Assuming you think who I think thinking.
I think that you are thinking John McClane.
Of course I'm thinking John McClane. All right. Dude, you can't... John McClane, man. John McClane, he can do anything. He's a genius, first of all. The stuff he thinks of...
Die Hard 2 sucked.
Have you seen any of the other Die Hard movies?
I've seen...
Die Hard 1, first of all, in my opinion, best action movie ever
made. It's spectacular. Yeah. I haven't seen it. It's been too long since I've seen it.
Oh, I should let you borrow it. You should watch it again.
Die Hard 2 was terrible. Die Hard 3 was okay. Die Hard 4, also okay.
I loved Die Hard 4. And a lot of people ragged on Die Hard 4. But Timothy Olyphant,
he's great.
And yeah. Justin Long was actually really solid.
He was entertaining. When they brought Kevin Smith in, I was like, F this movie. I'm done with this.
You hate Kevin Smith.
I hate Kevin Smith.
He did. He played the role that he needed to play
He played Kevin Smith is what he did.
That was the role they wrote, though. Yeah. The other thing that made that movie really good was Mary Elizabeth Winstead as his daughter.
Yeah.
She was like who I expect John McClane's daughter to be, though.
I didn't see the newest one. I was not looking at it.
I haven't seen the newest one yet either. I was a little put off that Jay Courtney, the guy, got picked to be his son.
Yeah, whatever.
But then I saw the stuff with him in it, and he kind of looks like a younger Bruce Willis if Bruce Willis was bald when he was younger.
Yeah, I just feel like the sequel soiled the original, as so often happens. You really think that John McClane is a better action hero than Indiana Jones?
I think that if you put John McClane... Okay, how would Indiana Jones have done in the first Die Hard? Indiana Jones would have died in the first Die Hard.
Yeah, well, John McClane would have died in the first Indiana Jones
movie. False.
It's not a fair argument.
He'd have been like, yippee-ki-yay, Ark of the Covenant. Then he'd have just whipped it off and everyone would have died but him.
No, it's not a fair statement.
I think that if you're going for toughness, the toughest action hero, John McClane, hands down. Coolest? I don't know. I mean, Indiana Jones. If you're talking about like a action hero in like a different kind of sense, because like it's like a fantasy type thing, right? Because Indiana Jones is all ridiculously far-fetched, right? I mean...
It's supernatural.
Right.
Yeah.
In that realm, I would say Indiana Jones... Hands down. Somebody was saying that they needed to do like a new League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's too late for it now, but like Indiana Jones, John McClane, like those type of people all together.
Yeah.
I would watch the crap out of that movie.
Yeah, sure.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator. Like, you know, how awesome would that be? I want to make that team. Like, let's make that movie.
Okay.
It's not going to happen. Gosh, that sounds like an awesome movie. Builders, unite. Make that movie.
That'll never happen. Like, not even hope.
How cool would it be, though?
That'd be stupid. It'd be terrible. Are you kidding me? It'd be terrible.
Well, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
I was sad that movie was terrible, because I didn't know anything about the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
No, I had no idea what it was until the movie, and I heard about the movie, I was like, dude!
I was like, no.
Yeah, but no, the movie was terrible. I still haven't read any comics because the movie was so terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's record a podcast.